You and your employees indeed may have this precious knowledge, but don't confuse that with thinking that you should or could go it alone.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Givers, a podcast where we spend some time with the change makers of the not-for-profit and social impact world. I'm Cliff Sloan. Givers is made by my agency, Phil & Company. We're a creative marketing agency working exclusively with some of the most important causes of our time. We're doing this podcast because we believe that we can do more good when we recognize the amazing work happening in our field. The following interview was recorded live at the Engage for Good conference in Chicago, where we sat down with Halo Award winner Nicola Dixon. Nicola is the executive director at the General Mills Foundation. She's going to be speaking with us about the General Mills Foundation's partnership with Partners in Food Solutions. This partnership has increased food security across Africa, advanced their sustainable agriculture, and much, much more. Please enjoy the interview. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here, Cliff.
So the inspiration for this effort began at a pretty high-level meeting in Davos, and I'm wondering if you could tell us how this got started.
Yeah, it did. Wow, you've done your homework. It was basically just over 10 years ago, our then CEO, Ken Powell, was attending what was his first participation at the World Economic Forum held in Davos, Switzerland, you know, very high-level event, in 2007. And the then UN Secretary General, Kofi Annan, had been leading a session around the daunting global food security and hunger challenges facing the world, and in particular, looking at the scale of that in Africa and the state of food insecurity and malnutrition. And as a fast follow-up to that session, Kofi Annan turned to our CEO and said, you know, what are you, Ken, as the leader of a global food company, doing to be a part of the solution to help address this problem? And really, Ken took that question and that challenge very much to heart. You know, we have already been working in food security and addressing hunger issues for more than a century, but we hadn't had an intentional approach to how we address hunger and food insecurity in the developing world, and certainly not yet in Africa. And from that seed, a project was born inside the company that sort of laid the foundation for what today has become Partners in Food Solutions. And it was initially an internal project to enable us to start to really participate in what we refer to as intellectual philanthropy, sharing what we know rather than just dollars we may have to address some of the most pressing problems confronting the world.
So there are a lot of organizations out there fighting food insecurity and hunger. What is PFS's unique approach?
Yeah, I mean, I would say PFS, and we use that acronym liberally because we speak of them often, so Partners in Food Solutions, or PFS, we still think it's a pretty new and unique model. We're essentially trying to connect. On the one hand, we have this abundance of food expertise across our, you know, tens of thousands of employees around the world, and we pair that with high potential, emerging, sort of small and growing food companies all over the African continent who are wrestling with some of the challenges that we've actually worked through in recent decades. So challenges around responsibly expanding production capacity, producing more food more safely, increasing the nutrient profile of the foods they make, et cetera. And so by pairing what we have in, I guess you could say somewhat of a state of abundance, with where we see an explicit need on the ground, we're able to have a much more catalytic and lasting impact than any grant alone or food donation could perhaps ever bring about.
And how do you actually work with these client organizations?
Yeah, so the model is pretty unique. We, General Mills is now one of six corporate partners around the world. So, you know, I should back up by saying that that little seed of an idea that started as an internal project inside our own four walls, we very soon realized it had outgrown us. It was bigger than we were. And so within 3 years, Partners in Food Solutions spun off and today is an independent, fully independent nonprofit organization, a 501c3, and five other global leading food companies have come on board, so their employees as well are contributing and offering their food expertise against this same opportunity. And the model is essentially that employees around the world on a volunteer basis raise their hand to share the expertise they may have, whether it's in product development, so formulas, whether it's in processing of food, you know, converting grains, et cetera, into a sellable product, brand building or business planning. And they work remotely, so virtually assisted, and are paired through the PFS model with companies across 10 countries in Africa who have been identified as having specific needs that could be addressed in the form of time-bound projects where we can pair that expertise with the opportunity.
And who are those five other companies that are in the mix?
Absolutely. So some of the names will be more familiar because they're B2C, business to consumer, and some are more B2B, so it may not be household names. But those include the Hershey Company, Cargill, DSM, Bueller, and Ardent Mills.
And you're focused in Africa, and I'm wondering how you landed on Africa as the impact zone.
Absolutely. So certainly as you look at global food insecurity, Africa does stand out in a number of ways. I mean, first of all, it's a continent today of 1.2 billion people, but it's also a place of where there is an enormous amount of population growth. A disproportionate amount of the world's population growth is occurring in Africa. So over the next 3 decades, there's going to be another billion people in Africa alone that need to be fed. So certainly understanding that point. The other sort of, I would say, reference point in terms of our logic was that today Africa is a net importer of about $40 billion worth of food they have to import every year to feed their own people. And the idea here is that by helping to strengthen and really grow the food production capacity of food companies all over the African continent, we can actually help African countries feed their own people while also helping to create a sustainable food value chain across the continent so that Africa can feed itself and over time, you know, maybe become a net exporter.
Impact is everything. So what are the impact proof points?
Yeah, you know, we were just reflecting on that recently. You know, we eclipsed sort of the one decade point of Partners in Food Solutions. So inevitably, those milestones bring some of that look back. And while we are continuously evolving how we measure and evaluate, you know, what's different because we were there, I would say we would point to a couple of things. You know, one, what started as this program inside a company like General Mills that was very much employee facing but not known to the world has now become really this sort of network or coalition of leading food companies, a host of nonprofits, even governments and others engaging together against this kind of shared vision that we have to be able to help Africa feed itself in a very sustainable and lasting way. So sort of, you know, noting that evolution of what was sort of this idea or concept and seeing it prove out into something that is bringing about this impact at scale today. The other piece we look at is that over that 10 years, we've engaged about 1,600 employees in projects that assisted about that many companies. So almost 1,600 companies in Africa have benefited from this expertise. And those companies collectively are helping to provide food for tens of millions across the continent. So not insignificant numbers, and certainly far more than we ever could have done if we tried to go it alone.
I know when we spoke last week, you said that there were a bunch of amazing volunteer stories. I'm wondering if you can share one or two with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I hear about new ones every week. So the sheer volume of how many projects are going on at any time is pretty remarkable. But, you know, it's everything from we've had a lot of packaging improvement projects. So Jessica Schwartz, one of our packaging engineers, worked on a project where really a company by the name of Soy Africa was really struggling to really have the messaging on the packaging reflect the key attributes of that product, you know, what the product could do for families and people nutritionally and in terms of what it offered the family more broadly. And so that was an instance of her engaging in a way that was really about applying principles we use every day in Europe and North America and Australia in so-called developed markets to really hit on key messages that matter and resonate with a core market and applied those same principles in a way that just happened to benefit consumers in markets in, you know, East and Southern Africa. We also hear and see all the time examples about nutrient fortification projects, which has become a pretty big pillar and a mainstay in the work that our volunteers are engaged with in PFS. You think about, you know, a company like General Mills, where we're a composite of many brands.
Nutrient fortification in plain English means?
Yeah, so adding essential nutrients, vitamins and minerals during the food product development process, processing so that we're able to, through food, just like we do here in the U.S., you might notice the side panel of your cereal box, you see all these minerals, vitamins and minerals, where you're getting maybe 30% of your daily recommended minerals and vitamins. And by bringing that into the fold and making that more of a mainstay across more of these small and emerging food companies in Africa, we're much better able to scale sustainable nutrition, and by making that a core component of more of the food that's flowing across the continent. Something we perhaps have taken for granted. We've been, you know, we're known as a big cereal company. We're also a big yogurt company with Yoplait and all these other brands. And, you know, that fortification component is more critical than ever in Africa.
You have one other volunteer story you can share?
Yeah, let's see. So Madison Barr comes to mind. She had a really remarkable experience. She was actually coming at a project from what we would call sort of a quality engineering and a quality maintenance standpoint. She was paired up with a woman at a food company who was new in role, and the woman she was paired with on site at the client company was a newly appointed, you know, kind of quality assurance manager. And I would say that what we heard and saw from Madison is that while she did transfer a lot of so-called technical knowledge and specifics around sort of the practice, if you will, a lot of what she also brought and the woman she worked with described as the real benefit was more sort of cultural professional development in the form of fully realizing the power she held and the importance of her role and having the confidence to fully own that and know that, you know, she needed to have it, her arms around owning that responsibility of really ensuring that across the company, all the quality practices were being adhered to. And part of it was, you know, kind of addressing some of the culturally rooted phenomenon in the area around women in positions of leadership. It's been an important component across assignments where with PFS, we see that about a third of the companies we engage with on the ground are women-led or women-owned. And so the notion of ensuring that these women are fully empowered and confident as leaders is another really key contribution we can make.
Do the volunteers return like emotionally charged up?
They do. I mean, I think one of the sort of the proof points we see of that is about 40% of the employee volunteers we have in place today have been volunteering for 4 years or more. And if you think about that in the context of projects that are often just a couple of months or even weeks, to be volunteering and going back for more and raising your hand time and time again, I think is the ultimate testament of, I not only know I made an impact on a company, you know, 10,000 miles away, but it also felt really good, and I got a lot, just as much out of it.
So PFS is an interesting, different type of model. Can you explain how it dovetails with the General Mills Foundation's mission?
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, I would say that it doesn't entirely replace the role of cash giving, of sort of so-called traditional philanthropy. We see it as a really powerful and. And, you know, honestly, I think had it not been for that sort of fortuitous meeting and exchange between our then CEO and Kofi Annan, I don't know that we would have been this far along in, you know, knowledge transfer and intellectual philanthropy as we have been able to come. You know, since then, we've been able to launch and create a couple of other programs that are focused on pro bono application of skills and knowledge transfer, but nothing at the level of Partners in Food Solutions, which, of course, has grown so large that we felt it really needed to become fully independent. You know, we're also pleased to see it flourishing today in that independent way.
And you mentioned that the perception of General Mills is as a food company. Yet you see knowledge as one of your greatest assets.
Absolutely.
In terms of pro-social activities. How did that come to be?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say knowledge is very much at the core. And part of the way I think about that is, you know, the company, we recently celebrated our 150th birthday, as I mentioned earlier, and we're a portfolio of a lot of brands. You know, unlike other companies, you won't necessarily see the words General Mills in every box, but we're Nature Valley granola bars, we're Yoplait yogurt, we're Cheerios and Wheaties and Häagen-Dazs, et cetera, around the world. And because of that, it's not like there's one secret formula that's our intellectual sort of property that we guard closely. It's really about maintaining a culture where where knowledge and curiosity and innovation can flourish, and that's really about our people, right? And I would say more than having and containing knowledge, it's about how we choose to apply it, and in this case, share it. And when it comes to General Mills making decisions about where and how we very carefully choose to share and apply that knowledge beyond our core business, it probably comes back to things that are pretty fundamental to us, tied to kind of our DNA as a company. And that is, you know, I would say that includes our company purpose, which is really all about serving the world by making food people love. It ties equally to, I think, some of the core values we hold dear as a company that have been really everlasting, things like do the right thing all the time. And, you know, the other piece that really kicks in here is that when we're deciding when and how we're going to share our know-how more broadly than our own four walls, I think it's very much rooted in General Mills having a pretty clear-eyed vision and perspective about the fact that however we engage, we want to try to deliver differential results. So, you know, not just in the marketplace, of course, because that allows us to do all this other good, but really having that broader impact around the world. And we don't see those two things as being competing. We see them as complementary and really mutually reinforcing.
Volunteerism and the way that you have mobilized and leveraged your workforce is a key element, also enviable. How did you socialize that across 11 years? How did you recruit, if that's the right word, or socialize it internally and grow the base to the point where it's the force that it is today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think some of the key words you used is it has been a journey. It's happened over, say, 11 plus years. We were, I think, pretty fortunate that at the beginning, Ken not only came back from Davos and had an idea and stuck it in a file or thought, you know, I'll work on that later, but he huddled with a number of our food leaders from R&D and elsewhere in the organization who had also been kind of grappling with this. You know, how can we do more? We've done a lot domestically. We've done a lot in other kind of global key markets, but we hadn't really cracked the code on how to address a region such as, you know, Africa. Within that, the seeds of that beginning, it very much rose as a movement within our food development and R&D organization. So we had some passionate leaders with equal conviction that were essentially co-founders, you know, leaders at General Mills like Peter Erickson and John Mendesh at the time, and, you know, really together working to figure this out. So in those early days, I would say very much inspired by and catalyzed by our product developers and our food scientists and the R&D folks, over time grew to more of a word-of-mouth model that I think you see today. When colleagues hear and see how their own colleagues are sort of changed or transformed, if you will, by a project they worked on and the impact they know they had. And that's kind of contagious, and the story starts to tell itself. And I think we're fortunate today that, you know, I think the biggest challenge the PFS team has is we often are in a situation where we have more people raising their hand than, and so we have to keep up with that matchmaking and, you know, assigning people to appropriate projects that really leverage their unique, you know, talents and expertise. So we've kind of got, they've got their work cut out for them today with so much demand to work on these projects.
And how does that show up in your talent development? I mean, volunteerism is obviously super important to employees and
Absolutely.
Prospective talent. How does that figure into your strategy?
Yeah, we think it's pretty powerful. Certainly, the program is fully at will, so this is optional. And, you know, you want people to be volunteering that have actually raised their hand and thought about this. The opportunity, I think, that we have seen as sort of a side benefit, so to speak, is that these project assignments often really help our employees build some new muscles. New skills, could be soft skills or technical skills, really get more, you know, fully comfortable in their own skin as leaders and recognize that they are leaders, even if they might have previously saw themselves as more of a behind-the-scenes contributor. And so, you know, if you think about some of the attributes of these assignments, this could be the first time an employee has had an international assignment. You know, working, you know, they might have worked in Minneapolis their whole career, or in Mumbai or Melbourne, and this might be the first time they've engaged with another culture, a speaker, you know, someone who's speaking English as maybe their third language. And certainly it can be one where, compared to what they're used to at a Fortune 100 company like General Mills, the assumptions are, you know, less can be assumed, that the context is more unknown and challenging. So it really, you know, helps to stretch you or push you out of your comfort zone, which most, I think, volunteers would say was more than they ever realized just what they needed, just to really kind of stretch themselves and to think differently and to really take stock of, in many instances, skills they already had but had taken for granted.
You mentioned that it was a journey. So I'm guessing that, like any other journey, there were some bumps along the road and,
sure,
and maybe some challenges that gave you an opportunity to learn or perhaps pivot. I'm wondering if you could share some of the challenges that you ran into.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it's not just been probably a few moments of pivots and learning. I would say the key to the success has been continuous learning, reexamination, pivots, and evolution. The organization you see today actually looks probably quite different from what you would have seen back in 2008, 2009. Everything from the sort of organizational structure and model of, like, you know, where the people and partners are and who sort of owns what part of the process and the coordination. But, you know, I think some of the mainstays that help to minimize really derailing pitfalls is that as we brought on new partners, it was always anchored in this very shared vision of what we were collectively seeking to achieve on the ground, and sort of a belief in the fundamental model of, if we can be effective at connecting the unique expertise, the food knowledge of, you know, this universe of people over here with these smart, aspiring entrepreneurs all over the African continent that are, you know, trying to feed 1 billion on its way to 2 billion people, amazing things can happen, and we need to be open along the way to working differently. It's got to be built on a lot of trust and relationships that are carefully built over time. And I think when you have that shared vision and alignment, when you have trust because you've taken the time to build relationships with key partners, I think we're all able to pivot that much more quickly, and we're all able to reflect on what could be done differently without too much, you know, getting tripped up on our own egos.
How do you discuss the activities or the impact when it comes to corporate reporting? You know, how does participation in PFS impact stakeholders? How do you table that?
You know, it's interesting because I think that changes all the time. I think more than ever, external stakeholders not only are pleasantly surprised, but they have almost come to expect that global companies are doing more than their fair share to leave the world in a better place. And so for a company like General Mills to have the amount of kind of knowledge we have about food systems and making food safer and, you know, nutrient fortification and, you know, even building brands and businesses, to keep that contained in a box and not share it with the rest of the world would be really a lost opportunity. And I think in the eyes of a lot of stakeholders, not the way to behave. And so, you know, I think we tend to attract employees and even vendors and partners and customers who more often than not sort of share a very similar type of orientation. We know more than ever that for our employees, not just millennials, but I would say of all generations, it's really important for them to work for a company that really lives its purpose. And with programs like Partners in Food Solutions, it builds on, you know, a pretty significant base of other ways that we make it easy for our employees to engage. This happens to be a pretty unique one, but it builds on a culture where, you know, we have 83% of our employees participating in volunteerism versus the typical company, more like 30%. You know, so it's very, it's a big part of our culture, and employees get enormous sort of pride and satisfaction, whether they choose to engage as an individual, which is the model of PFS. It's more, you know, one-to-one. You're typically not working with other colleagues at General Mills, or whether you choose to engage in volunteerism on more of a team basis.
The PFS clients have received $22 million in support, which is impressive. I'm wondering if you could talk about impact beyond the dollar amount for these organizations.
Certainly. And I think you're referring to these companies, the 1,600 or so, have been able to attract outside investments, you know, from sort of, you know, capital based on their own merits, and in part perhaps because others are seeing that they're gaining, you know, expertise from companies like General Mills through PFS. But I think that is a testament to the potential, and that others see the potential as well. You know, in terms of how these companies are left stronger after their engagement, I would say what's so wonderful about the model of knowledge transfer is that long after the project has ended and the employee might have been reassigned or moved on to the next thing, the impact is indeed lasting. So if you think about a company in Kenya that might be, you know, part of a food supply chain that's impacting millions of households, that company, knowing that it has adopted sort of best practices in food handling and food processing that make the food safer, more consistent, higher quality, in some cases more nutritious, that is something that will last, you know, far longer than any project duration, and has, again, really will have a difference long after we're gone.
So the audience for this podcast is almost strictly people in the social impact, pro-social, CSR world. We always try and give them a takeaway or a learning out of these interviews and podcasts. And I'm wondering if there are three takeaways you can share about knowledge transfer as an asset versus a traditional donation model.
Sure.
That people would find valuable.
I think I would say that if you're already looking at knowledge transfer as your key lever of change and you're recognizing your opportunity for intellectual philanthropy, just think about the fact that you and your employees indeed may have this precious knowledge, but don't confuse that with thinking that you should or could go it alone. Design and build a network of like-minded partners, because, you know, through some carefully selected partners and a model that allows for more of that, you can go far further and you can certainly do it faster. And so the power of partnerships, which is really at the heart of PFS, has absolutely been what's enabled us to vastly exceed those original aspirations. The second piece I would say is that, you know, we certainly feel, and maybe the whole thing is built on the premise that the impact we have through these engagements is as enduring, if not more enduring, than any foundation cash grant we could ever give. And I would say the flip side of that coin is, you know, companies should not be surprised if they come to find out and discover through their engagement with a program like PFS or something similar that employees come back and tell them that they feel like they're the ones that really benefited, that they know there's a client out there that, you know, has safer products or, you know, can produce 30% more food, et cetera. But, you know, many will say that they're sort of forever changed, and it may really, you know, rekindle their own ambitions for further development and impact, and they might see and view what they're capable of very differently. So just don't underestimate the transformation that can also come right back to your company in the form of highly engaged, really passionate employees.
You mentioned that in terms of volunteerism and getting people to participate, you've sort of adopted a word of mouth model. And I'm wondering tactically what that means specifically in terms of how you attract the talent, or do they just come to
Absolutely,
you at this
for the
point?
Projects. So yeah, I mean, while it is essentially word of mouth, I mean, we certainly have fun and are really creative and engage, you know, PFS volunteers and employees around the company in continuously developing and creating like new ways to kind of get that word out. So I hope I'm not talking out of school, but we actually have kind of a company happy hour every Thursday afternoon at world headquarters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been known to kind of hijack that event and make it like kind of a PFS fest and have some of the, you know, most recent volunteers share their stories. We have also in a more traditional sense, you know, we will host sometimes 1-hour sessions where we'll have maybe some visiting team members from the African continent at our world headquarters out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we'll invite employees anywhere who have any, you know, kind of anything resembling a remote interest to learn more about PFS to come in and to hear about the model, hear how lives are being changed, you know, hear from whether it's a company that benefited or other team members on the ground. And I think it's the combination or the constellation of all of that, you know, hearing it right, you know, informally from, you know, your teammate over coffee, or hearing about it on the company blog, or attending, you know, a happy hour and seeing it firsthand. I think all of that helps to kind of continue to fuel that pipeline of, you know, pretty passionate employee volunteers.
All right, Nicola, thank you so much for being on Givers. We appreciate it, and we wish you continued luck.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Okay, be well. Thank you all. And thank you for joining us, too. Hey, I have a request. Whether it's a nonprofit or CSR leader, a philanthropist or a foundation, a pro-social marketer, or even just someone who has smart ideas about the ways we can grow impact and improve people's lives, we want them on Givers. So get in touch. We love good ideas for guests. Write us at givers@fillandcompany.com or reach us through the Phil & Co. website. Givers is produced by Phil & Company for you. We're a creative marketing and communications agency dedicated exclusively to philanthropies and companies doing good. You, me, the whole Phil & Co. team, we're all here because we're passionate about making a difference. And time is always one of our most precious resources. So thank you for giving us some of yours. Make sure you follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whichever podcast app you're using so you never miss an episode. I'm Cliff Sloan. You can reach me at cliff@philandcompany.com. See you next time.